This is The Tenth Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The Tenth Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The Tenth Voice. I'm Una Nowling, here with my co-hostess, Fiona Nowling. Behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. We have two themes for the program today. First, we are going to reopen the subject of transgender prisoners, focusing on what happens afterwards and how society has placed many barriers on success towards transgender persons who have served their time and are fighting to live their lives in America. We will be talking with Joanna, a guest we interviewed last October, to check up on her and find out how she has been doing getting her life in order. Also with us is April, a transgender woman and activist who is trying to get a fresh start after a history of legal difficulties. In our second half, we will interview Ari Copeland, a transgender man who is a senior water scientist at a global engineering firm, to talk about his life and to discuss, along with myself, the perils and joys of crossing the gender barrier in the corporate engineering world. Fiona will finish up with the community calendar update, but first, let me take a look at the LGBT news of the week. In leading news, on Thursday this week, Republican Kansas Representative John Whitmer introduced an anti-transgender bathroom bill that requires all bathrooms in public schools be segregated based upon your gender at birth. HB 2171 is missing the cash bounty provisions that were placed upon our heads last year, which allows Whitmer to have the unmitigated brass ball gall to call this a, quote, compromise, unquote, bill. The bill is actually worse in some ways than the last assault upon us, as it gives the Kansas Attorney General full authority to prosecute transgender children and to seek any penalty so long as it is, quote, equitable, unquote, should they decide to become bathroom terrorists. And dare, yes, dare, to use the bathroom congruent with their gender identity. Equality Kansas is leading the fight against this bill, and more information will be posted at eqks.org. President Obama, under whose watch so many advances in transgender protections and policies were made, gave transgender persons one final piece of protection on his last full day in office. On January 19th, the day before everything went so horribly wrong, also known as Inauguration Day, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services released a memo stating that transgender immigrants may change their gender marker on their immigration papers and documents, provided that they show a court order, surgeon's letter, or a letter from a medical professional stating that the person's new gender designation is congruent with their gender identity. The legal status of this memo is unclear, however, thanks to Trump's executive order mandating a so-called regulatory freeze. Another Day One executive order immediately stopped implementation of all Affordable Care Act requirements that would create any sort of cost on a government agency. This means that Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act will be prevented from taking effect. And for those of you who don't remember my December news rant, this section of the Affordable Care Act stated that sex-specific health care cannot be denied based upon gender identity, and it would have provided an avenue towards government assistance for gender confirmation surgery. This freeze was something promised by the incoming Trump administration, which has said they will not enforce this provision and will work towards a repeal as soon as possible. Former North Carolina anti-transgender Governor Pat McCrory was visiting Washington, D.C. for President Donald Trump's inauguration when he was spotted and pursued by what was described as a few dozen protesters outside the Capitol Hilton Hotel. Known as the kingpin behind the odious North Carolina anti-transgender bathroom bill, HB2, the former governor hurried down an alleyway as he was confronted by the protesters who chanted, "Shame on you." And McCrory's spokesman later played the Rodney King card by wringing his hands like Vivian Leigh and wailing, "We should all be listening to each other and coming together as a country in a respectful manner." Colorado Republican Chairman Richard Drake made his hatred of transgender persons out and proud when he shared a Facebook meme last week depicting a castration device with the statement, quote, "Make them think twice before entering the ladies' room. Share if you know what these are used for, unquote. Drake refused categorically to respond to phone calls, emails, and even severely annoyed carrier pigeons with an explanation as to why he decided to share a meme advocating the vivisection of human beings. California is hoping to become the first state to fully recognize gender non-binary persons by allowing a third gender option on state identification documents. Democratic State Senator Tom Atkins' bill, known as SB 179, would add a non-binary gender marker option for driver's licenses, birth certificates, ID cards, and court orders. The bill would also greatly simplify the process for changing one's gender on these documents, eliminating the need for a doctor's or surgeon's approval or an appearance in court. The bill would also allow minors to specify a gender change on their birth certificate. The bill is opposed by the California Family Council, a conservative Christian group, whose lead Muppet Jonathan Keller said, and I quote, "We believe government documents need to reflect biological facts for identification and medical purposes," unquote. Laws like this will simply erase any meaningful gender definitions if being made male or female is completely divorced from biological facts, he further added. He did not explain why he was completely ignorant of the existence of intersex persons, nor why he has decided to dig in his heels against the overwhelming tide of scientific proof of transgender reality, and like many Republicans, have a laser-like focus upon the genitals of children. Detroit native Jason Lamar Hogan was charged Tuesday, January 24th in Wayne County Court with an assault to intent and commit murder with a felony firearm after he shot a transgender woman who was not identified in her face. Police allege Hogan met the transgender woman on January 13th and paid for sex in the back of his car. After the sex act, Hogan shot her in the face with a handgun. The woman, amazingly, was hospitalized with only minor injuries, and the Detroit police subsequently investigated the incident and arrested Hogan on the 22nd, holding him on a $250,000 cash bond. In other news, Sioux Falls native Joshua LeClaire will stand for the recent murder of a transgender woman. LeClaire is accused of stabbing 28-year-old Jamie Lee Wounded Arrow to death on New Year's Day in an apartment complex near Cleveland Avenue in Sioux Falls. Finally, transgender persons around the world are gritting their teeth and reaching for their painkillers after the trailer for the transgender exploitation film The Assignment was released. The film's grossly offensive plot vomits forth upon the silver screen the story of an assassin, played by alleged actress Michelle Rodriguez, who is captured by a surgeon, played by formerly respected actress Sigourney Weaver, and forced to undergo gender reassignment surgery. This transphobic tire fire of a film has received flaccid reviews after premiering at the Toronto International Film Festival, and has received the sort of lukewarm commentary such as, quote, "better than a poke in the eye with a stick," unquote. One reviewer wrote, quote, "It's like somebody filled a room with typewriters and macaques and waited until one of them randomly butt-typed a suitably offensive script," unquote. Okay, I admit it was me that wrote that last one, but still. Listeners with good memories may recall I reported last year that star Rodriguez claimed there was no way, no how, not in a trillion years that any film she ever worked on could be transphobic because she is reportedly bisexual. Really bisexual, uber bisexual. And I don't mean the five Jägermeister shots kind of bi-curious one can witness at Missy B's on any given weekend. I suppose time will tell if this film is the sort of breakaway success that the Teletubbies Do Bangkok was, or if it will totter on the ash heap of history like so many E.T. the video game Atari cartridges. And if any of my listeners out there got that last reference, I love you, and I want to raise many fine and noble children with you. I also want to take a minute to say that if you are a frequent listener of the 10th Voice and would like to continue having our fiercely independent and listener-supported program on the air, fighting injustice and serving as a beacon of light in these 4 years of darkness that lie ahead of us, then we'd like to ask you to donate by calling us at 888-931-0901 or by going to our website, which is kkfi.org. I mean, where else on the radio can you find a hopping mad transgender person ranting about the atrocities committed daily by the entirety of Western civilization upon LGBTQIA persons? Where else can you find a movie review that contains the words macaque, Jägermeister, and tire fire in it? I mean, by reviewing that last shambling horror of a film in today's news, I've probably saved each and every one of you $8 for a movie ticket, $10 for a bag of popcorn, and $22 for a soft drink. I mean, what's that, about $300? I mean, how about giving us a call and donating just a little bit of that savings to help keep us on the air?
Remind me, with that mass, you're on the finance committee?
Leave me alone. I'm on a roll. I'm Una Nowling, and that was the transgender news for the week. Don Helder Camara wrote, quote, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist," unquote. This message tells us that the best way to help others is often to take action to address the root cause of why this oppression and inequality exists, even though most don't want to take that harder path. This is why on this segment of the Trends Talk Show, of the segment of the 10th Voice, excuse me there, I'm just still on a roll from the news rant. We are readdressing the issues of discrimination facing transgender persons who have served time or been entered into what some call the school-to-prison system in the United States. It is no secret that transgender persons have a higher rate of convictions than the general population. This is largely due to the statistics of transgender sex workers who are simply trying to survive after having been abused and thrown away by society. The numbers are appalling. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the number of transgender prisoners in the state and federal system ranged from 3,000 to 4,000 persons. But the most appalling figure is while the national average for prison sexual abuse is 4%, the average for transgender prisoners was almost 35%. And upon leaving the incarceration system, transgender ex-prisoners face many challenges in employment, education, and health care as a multiple minority in society. Our listeners will recognize one of our guests today, Joanna, who is an ex-prisoner we spoke with in October, who is going to give us an update on her life. Also joining us is April, an ex-prisoner who has become an activist since her experience to try to improve the lives of others, and we are going to talk to her about her life and experience. Joanna and April, welcome to Trans Talk today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to start, Joanna, by having you give us a bit of an update on what has happened in your life since you were here talking to us this last October.
Well, quite a bit, actually. So, a couple of the difficulties that I've found since post-release has really just been like integrating back into community and focusing. I have a lot of anxiety issues or have had a lot of anxiety issues, and so learning how to overcome that has been really difficult for me. Men especially make me really uncomfortable now, and I hadn't anticipated that coming from an environment where I was completely surrounded by men. I find that outside of that realm, men don't just naturally know that I'm transgender. And so so I was at a place of business. And I had just earlier in the day, or the day before, had a laser treatment on my face. And as you know, sometimes that can cause like a lot of like skin irritation and texture. And so I tried to cover it up with foundation. But I think it was the first time that I really felt like, oh, wow, my face is jacked up. And so I'm standing there on my phone texting, which technology was a big struggle for me. They didn't have smartphones, you know, when I went in. And so, you know, figuring out how to text and do it quickly has been a struggle. So I'm sitting there, like, struggling with this autocorrect, which is the root of all evil. And all of a sudden, I just hear this loud freak, and I feel this, like, bam on the side of my head, and someone had come up behind me and hit me so hard in the back of my head that my foot slipped out from under me, and I hit the back of my head on, or I hit the side of my head on my car door, and it cut my head open. So I just got out of the joint. So I'm not going to like put up with that. So I start chasing this dude down, And I'm like screaming, you know, really nice things at him. And but then I realize it's impossible. He's like, I outweigh him by a fair amount, and he was awfully fast that day, so he escaped. And then when I told the place of business, they were just like, well, we'll check the cameras and see if we see something, but, you know, things like this happen to people like you sometimes. And I found that to be so offensive. And so, like, well, I registered a couple complaints and really didn't go anywhere.
And you probably didn't feel like you, it was, you probably, did you not feel safe approaching the police directly?
No, not at all. I didn't call the police at all. I have like a big fear about, when I get pulled over, just for like a random traffic stop, I have like literal panic attacks. I actually got into a car wreck and I called my friend Matt, like as the cop was there, because I immediately assumed I'd be arrested or taken to jail. And so then, you know, he was such a good friend and like actually showed up. And then as soon as the cop left, I just like broke down and freaked out and started bawling. And, you know, he was really awesome about that. One of like three people who I've allowed to see me ugly cry, and that poor man has seen me ugly cry like 8 times now.
April, we'd like to ask you to tell a bit about your story and, you know, your experience, your story in general and your experience, you know, with the prison system and adjusting after you got out.
Okay. Yeah, I got out of prison about 9 years ago now, so it's been a while. I did a year in there for a nonviolent drug offense. The first thing I want to say is that according to any study, any statistic, anything you look at, prisons do not reduce crime. Prisons do not reduce crime. In fact, I would argue that they increase crime, because when you get out of prison, you know, my aim was to kind of integrate into society. That's what, you know, they have classes in prison, things, and they push that into your head that, you know, when you get out, you need to, you know, follow the certain path that's been laid out, going to college, whatever, or getting a trade or something like that. And they really push you to reintegrate. So that was my aim when I got out. I went to college, and I finished up college because I actually got arrested while I was after my first couple years of college. So I finished college, and then after that, I just had really big problems maintaining employment, because it was either the fact that I had this felony or the fact that I'm trans, and the combination of the two and the interplay between those, the interconnectedness between those two oppressions have kept me from finding, you know, gainful employment despite, you know, a 3.5 GPA in college and, you know, a bachelor's degree and things like that. So it's been really disappointing, and it's driven me to take up the role as of an activist and to try to improve the conditions in this community, not just for myself, but for other people who might go for this. And I hear about Joanna's story, and I wish her nothing but the best, and I hope that she can make a successful reintegration in society. And I think that there needs to be more opportunities for people coming out of prison. If the goal really is to reduce crime or to, you know, rehabilitate people back into society, then employers need to start, you know, opening up their doors to people who are coming out of prison. And people who are coming out of prison aren't always going to be, you know, your perfect looking, you know, cis hetero white person. You know, a lot of people coming out of prisons are minorities of a certain type, people of color, you know, oppressed nations people, queer people. Basically, prisons are just, you know, have kind of been used to take all these unwanted elements in society and dump them there in the waste basket for these people deemed unworthy. And so when we get out, we typically have these multiple oppressions that we're facing, you know, whether we're trans or, you know, whether you're a person of color. You have that to deal with, along with the fact that you have this new, what I call the Scarlet Letter. We all read that, you know, book in grade school or whatever. My Scarlet Letter is an F, and wherever I go, that letter is carried with me, even 9 years after getting out of prison and about 8 years since getting off parole.
Could you tell us what you've been doing for in your role as an activist and how you've been trying to help reduce that stigma for people?
One thing that we did last year was here in Kansas City, and it actually spread to all cities everywhere in the United States and across the globe even, is January 22nd is International Day of Solidarity with Transgender Prisoners. And I was heavily involved in helping organize that at the call of some a trans brother who is in prison. We talked about the issues facing trans people in prison. We talked about letter writing and ways to support trans people in prison and how to support them on their way out of prison. And, that was a really good event. And, this year too and next year and every year we're going to have an International Day of Solidarity for Transgender Prisoners because the things that the prison system right now is taking in a lot of trans people because as more trans people come out it becomes a more welcome society for trans people to come out, our the target on our back grows. So it's just the best thing we can do right now is show our support, show our solidarity until we can tackle the bigger project of prison reform or complete prison abolition.
What do you do personally to try to keep your strength up? Because I know you're facing the challenge of being a double minority here and trying to find work. And despite all of your successes and all of your hard work that you've done in your life, you're facing so much that you just have to fight against. How do you keep your own spirits up?
With my involvement in the movement and the community and being an activist and trying to have a voice and stand on my feet as best as I can to stick up for myself against these issues, because if society won't give me a job or whatever, if they don't want to employ me or whatever, and they don't want to welcome me into this society, then I'm going to be out there struggling against those conditions that have put me in this situation and are putting other people in this situation, because that's all I can do.
Have you found that there is even more pressure facing transgender people of color who have been through the prison system?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They have a whole another layer of oppression that they have to deal with, and coming out and finding jobs, and integrating back into the community, so to speak. It's a lot tougher on them, and absolutely.
Now, I wanted to ask both of you if you are aware of any resources locally that can help people in your situation, or that you have received help from, or is it really just not much available locally to lend a hand?
I know for me personally, as far as healthcare goes, I go to the Casey Care Clinic, and they're the only place that I can afford. They're on a sliding scale, and so when I go, it only costs me $25 for a visit. However, I have some significant damage due to rape trauma that I have to have surgery for, and they don't have any, there's no way to cover that. And so I'm at a position where I've tried to contact a lot of different places. It's hard. The parole office actually helps me with my housing right now, and I live in transitional housing, and so they're helping me to transition into an actual apartment in Johnson County, in Wyandotte County. So it's difficult. There are some organizations that will help, but a lot of times there's a stigma being a felon, even in the trans community. I've had a lot of struggle in the community from other trans women because I'm a felon, and so a lot of times they are uncomfortable around me, or I only have a small handful of friends in the community.
Mm-hmm. April, what do you know about resources that may be available in the area?
Yeah, I also go to the Casey Care Clinic, and I think it's the doctor there that I have is really great. really knows his stuff compared to any other doctor for trans healthcare that I've ever had. So I'm happy that we have that resource here in the community. Other resources for people who are, you know, trans and facing prison might be the ACLU. That's a common agency for people to contact who are dealing with some of these issues. And then personally, I found support and camaraderie from people within the activist community here, specifically the organization that I help with, Progressive Youth Organization, has the people in there have really just given me support and welcomed with open arms members of the trans community, regardless of what our situation is. And, you know, that's been a really positive thing in my life. And so I'm happy to have that, too.
How could people contact that organization if they were interested in learning more?
We have a Facebook page, Progressive Youth Organization, Kansas City. So you can go there and message us. And we also have our website details on there, too.
I know as well that there is also nationally the Sylvia Rivera Law Project, which is online at slrp.org, where they run many prisoner support, assistance, and outreach programs for transgender persons. And I just want to say that it's been... I have experienced secondhand some of that backlash against transgender persons who have criminal records. When I worked for the Justice Project of Kansas City, we worked with many women and men who have to work the streets of Kansas City. And it was like when I was telling people that I was volunteering to help, especially the transgender persons working the street, they were almost recoiling from me. And I'm like, wait a minute. These are your brothers and sisters. They have that common bond with you. How can you do that? And as well, yeah, but you know, they're criminals. And I was just, I've been shocked and disappointed to see that attitude. And it's I hate to say it's a very Johnson County attitude, because it really spans all the privileged areas of this city.
They say it as if they're perfect, as if they've never had a speeding ticket or jaywalked or anything.
Yeah, I would say that that attitude in general is a racist attitude and a transphobic attitude. There's few, you know, people in communities of color here, or even in the trans community, who aren't affected some way by the prison system and the prison industrial complex. The modern prison system, as well as modern policing, are direct extensions from... After slavery was supposedly abolished in the United States, prisons started. There's a show on Netflix that a lot of people have been watching, and I can't recommend it enough, a movie called The 13th Amendment. And it goes into some of this, and right after the supposed abolition of slavery here, prisons started popping up. And the 13th Amendment says that slavery or indentured servitude is abolished, except for... in instances where someone has committed a crime. And so these institutions like prisons, policing, these are things that popped up right after, the supposed, you know, whenever, 1865 or whatever. They're extensions from that. They still exist today, and it's shameful. And now we're seeing, prisons continue to be built. And we're hearing about this school-to-prison pipeline that's going to be happening, and they're trying to say that if youth here in high schools get in fights, that they can be charged as adults. And you were talking earlier on the show about the bathroom bill and how it's going to affect the youth in the trans community. And if trans people in high schools are facing this type of oppression, you know, and this type of segregation, they're going to be targeted and they're going to be picked on, and that's going to cause fights. And a lot of cis people don't understand, self-defense the way that a lot of us trans people do. And so it's going to lead to increased fights. It's going to lead to more trans youth being in prison, more people of color being imprisoned at a younger age. And the reason that the prisons have exploded, especially since the early 90s, and the rise of neoliberalism, is because, you know, to create more available cheap labor, free labor. I'm from Idaho, and most Idaho potatoes that you see or that you'll buy in the store, they're all harvested, packaged, everything down the assembly line from prison labor, all Idaho potatoes. There's a lot of products like that out there. The blue books that college students buy are all made by prison labor, and we need to start doing better, and we need to start struggling against these things. We need to start not participating in that process and doing what we can to resist there.
And Missouri is going in the opposite direction with them introducing the ability to give school children felonies rather than misdemeanors for getting into those fights that you said are accelerating. Mm-hmm. They're speeding up the school-to-prison pipeline.
Mm-hmm. And then incarceration doesn't end once you walk out of that building. Post-release is incarceration as well. I mean, a parole officer has the authority at any time for any whim to, you know, reincarcerate you even after you've been released. And so if you have someone who's already done, you know, an 8-year period of time, and then 3 years later on post-release they commit, you know, a minor act or something that is deemed inappropriate, they can go back to prison for an undisclosed amount of time and have to see a parole board. It's insane.
I'd like to thank you, Joanna, and you, April, for coming on our show and talking with us today. I wish that we had more time to talk about this, and maybe we can have you back here very shortly to really dig into this issue a bit more. Like, thank you very much for coming to the 10th Voice.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief musical break and then be back to talk to Ari Copeland after the music. Hello and welcome back to Trans Talk. I wanted to make a brief pitch again for those of you out there listening to help support us here at KKFI.org. Nowhere else in Kansas City are you going to find a program like the 10th Voice, where we cover in depth the issues, the topics, the challenges, and the successes facing the LGBTQIA community right here in Kansas City. Nowhere else are you going to have such powerful messages from local Kansas City residents as we just heard from April and Joanna. And if you would like to help us out, to help me out and Fiona out as well, and all the other members of the 10th Voice team to continue this work, I'd like to ask if you could just take a minute and donate by calling us at 888-931-0901. And I know that our phones are sometimes a bit busy, so please try back if you get a busy signal. Or you can also go to our website at kkfi.org. Thank you very much.
And if you don't want to miss our show by calling now, you can call later and tell them that you are calling to support the 10th Voice and Trans Talk. Thank you very much. Well, our next guest is Ari Copeland, who works for the same company as Una does and transitioned at work there in the opposite direction. He is a lead water and wastewater specialist in the water business with a multinational consulting engineering firm and a licensed professional water operator, and is joining us by phone from Connecticut today to discuss his personal journey as well as his personal experiences crossing the gender divide in engineering. Ari, welcome to Trans Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your life? Where did you grow up, and how did you get into engineering?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm originally from Connecticut, where I live now. And basically, how I got into engineering is kind of, I guess you could say, like a family business. I don't know. My father was a chemical engineer, and he actually worked for a company that produced rubber, and basically he is like the environmental compliance manager for the chemical factory, so he was actually in charge of treating the waste prior to discharging it back into the Naugatuck River. So very similar kind of skill set to what I do. You know, he worked with operators, I worked with operators, so it's kind of interesting. And my uncle is a mechanical engineer, and I think he does some kind of battery recycling, but he's done like, you know, earth quake-proofing, you know, earthquake-proofing of buildings in Japan and things like that. So I kind of was always steered more towards the, I guess, STEM side of, you know, career choices. But I have two sisters, and I'm the only one that has a STEM career, I guess you could say. So, but that's pretty much how I kind of fell into engineering and science. I have a bachelor's degree in civil engineering and a master's in environmental engineering. So pretty much all I do is, right now, is water and wastewater treatment, and supporting, you know, water and wastewater treatment plant designs and, you know, getting the plant started up and dealing with all the problems and training the operators to run them, kind of thing. So
I know that you also are involved with the developing questions for the professional examinations. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm a volunteer with ABC, which is the Association of Board Certification, which they're a non-for-profit professional association that actually tries to standardize water, wastewater distribution and collection and lab tech exams. So I help QAQC questions for the water treatment side exam and the distribution, water distribution side of the exam. We're actually rewriting one of the certification guides. It's like a book of questions to help people tell you for their exam. So I do things like that. And that's actually locally based in Olathe, Kansas, actually. So I go out there once a year and help them with that. So, yep, that is true.
I know when you were here last time, you were able to hang out with me and Fiona. For our listeners out there, Ari and I work at the same company. It's kind of a very unique situation, a global, major engineering firm that has a transgender man as one of its lead water scientists in the company and a transgender woman who is also very highly visible from the power side of the company. It's a very... I don't know any other engineering company in the world that has that sort of tag team duo working for it. Do you?
I don't off the top of my head. I mean, I do know other trans people that work within my group within Black & Veatch, and they're pretty, technically they're pretty high up there. But unfortunately, I don't know in other comparable firms to where we work, a similar situation. I definitely don't. I've never heard of it. So.
Oh, yes, of course. There are many other transgender individuals at our company. They're not quite as public about it as the two of us are, though.
Right. Exactly.
When did you know that you were transgender?
That's kind of a... It's not a complicated question, but it's kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say convoluted, but I guess I didn't really... I always knew something was kind of different about me, but I think for a long time I confused probably gender and sexuality to be the same thing, which is pretty common for, I would say, a lot of people, I guess. So I would say probably the first time I really realized that this is really what I am, it's probably around the age of like 25 or 26. I knew that something was different, and I definitely wasn't really like a lesbian. I didn't really fit into that kind of dichotomy, and I had women tell me that they just didn't really think I was mentally female for, you know, several years before that, but I was kind of like very resistant to accepting that. So but yeah, I would say probably 25. If anything earlier, I don't have many memories before the age of 13, so it'd be hard for me to pinpoint if it happened earlier in my childhood, which I know a lot of trans people can tell you that, you know, it manifested much earlier in their lives. For me, I can't. I mean, 25 is probably, I would say, the age where I actually said, okay, I'm definitely, this is what I am. So...
So you felt uncomfortable before, but that's the point when you said, this is where I am and I have to do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't start, you know, physically transitioning at 25. I did start going to, a therapist and talked about it for several years. And then I started taking hormones like probably around the age of 27 or 28. That's kind of the first step towards, you know, doing that. And I actually started taking hormones prior to coming out to my employer, and I actually took them for several years before I even told them. So, which was interesting.
See,
created a lot of interesting problems.
See, you must have had, say, 10 or 12 years as a female, seen as
right.
a female engineer. And
right.
how long has it been since you transitioned in the workplace?
I'd say it's been at least 8 years, or maybe a little bit longer than that.
So, based on that time in the office as both seen as, and treated as both genders, how has small talk in the office changed?
I was really lucky. The office I worked in, which actually was not in a very trans-friendly state, I was actually in the state of Florida, is where I actually transitioned. They're not, you know, the county I lived in didn't really have any type of laws or protection. Florida in general, not really a, you know, super great place to transition. But the office I transitioned in was fine. I mean, I worked for a lot of those people for six, you know, plus years. And most of them, you know, I would say for the most part really didn't care. I mean, you have, you know, a handful of special individuals that were definitely made uncomfortable by it, but they definitely never did anything, at least directly to me. They may have talked about me behind my back, but they never did anything directly to me to, you know, make me feel uncomfortable or try to, you know, hurt me professionally or personally or anything like that. I was very lucky. I think it helped that the person that was the office manager at the time was a woman. So I think that helped me a little bit because she was the only female person there that was, you know, a technical person. So she was like a high-level, you know, engineer. So that was kind of nice. But, I mean, everyone else there was really nice to me and very understanding. And actually most of the feedback that the office manager got from people was that they, most people were just nervous that they were going to call me the wrong pronoun and then make me feel bad, which I think is actually pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, so.
One of the side benefits that Una has been so relieved about from her transition is before, when she went on work trips, she would always have to make small talk to the clients about sports, which she had no interest in. How have things like that changed for you?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely changed. So I always forget because, you know, I have a bunch of, like, you know, baseball caps. And I think I bought one when I lived in Denver. And it's like, I bought it because it was orange, but I guess I didn't realize it was, like, a Denver Broncos hat. So every time I wear that, then, like, pretty much just talk to me about it. And I'm looking at them like, oh, yeah, right, I wore the sports hat today. I got to endure this now, right? Because I have really no interest in sports at all. So, you know, but yeah, you know, guy, you know, people assume that you have various interests based on your gender. And, you know, more, I get, you know, people talk to me about sports. They talk to me about, you know, they assume I'm straight. So they talk to me about, you know, women and all kinds of things that I really never had to worry about before, when they just thought I was like a female engineer and possibly not straight. So it's definitely interesting. I think the most interesting thing is that, and I guess maybe I was just naive and didn't realize it, but I didn't realize how much men do not say until women leave the room. So, you know, I get to listen to, not saying all men, but, you know, I work in a lot of construction.
Oh, no, sites. Never all men.
Right, yeah, I'm just trying to make that clear. It's never all men or women or anything I talked about, but, you know, I work on construction sites, and I don't want to, like, you know, stereotype anybody, you know, but, you know, when I'm there and when, you know, when female engineers or whoever is there that's not male or being perceived as male leaves, you know, and you get to hear all of the, you know, interesting, semi-sexist, potentially homophobic, you know, jokes, inappropriate, dirty jokes that, you know, you definitely would never say around me if they either knew who I was before, or, you know, if I was, you know, go back 10 years ago, if I was in the room, that would never happen. So I think it's kind of, sometimes I feel like a spy, even though that's not really the right, you know, I'm not trying to fool anybody, but, you know, I just feel like, wow, this is all the stuff I was missing. As soon as I leave, this is pretty much what they do.
So, like,
I get to listen to it.
Like Trump's locker room talk?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and vice versa, right? Because women, when they're together, you know, they don't necessarily always discuss things when men are around too. So, you know, I used to have to listen to that. Now I don't have to listen to that anymore. So it's kind of interesting. So.
I've encountered that. I've been in many, you know, round table debates, you know, by the sinks in the ladies' room, you know, for things that people will never, you know, other women will never say out there in public. And I want to ask you one thing, though, about the bathrooms. One of the things I discovered after my transition is that the ladies' rooms were so much cleaner than the men's rooms. And are you kind of shocked and appalled by what you see?
Not really anymore, I guess. I just, honestly, when I go to the restroom, I literally don't look around. I literally just go in, and now it's fast as I possibly can. You know, I don't look at anybody, I don't talk to anybody, because, you know, that's not, men don't do that, generally.
Of course, I just kind of
go in, do whatever I need to do, wash my hands and, like, disinfect myself, and then, like, literally, like, run out. But yeah, the men's room definitely... I don't know. All I can say is I'm not really, I'm kind of scarred for life and how I know people don't wash their hands. I mean, I know some women that don't either, but man, yeah. Don't wash their hands.
But so that information spreads at work. People know who doesn't.
Right. Like, but yeah, I agree with you. I wasn't necessarily shocked, but I definitely try to keep my time limited in there as much as I can.
What about being treated and taken seriously as a professional? Have you found a big difference in that between when you were treated as a woman and as a man, as an engineer?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I definitely feel, for the most part, I probably can get away with more. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I don't really have to hold back as much as I used to as a woman, because you know how it is. Like, if you're, like, outspoken and you're a woman, you're like, you know, I don't want to say the word on the radio, but I think you get what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
You know, you're just, like, kind of an annoyance, or you're just like, you know, whatever, she's just, you know.
Or you make a joke and people look at you because they don't expect you to say something crude because you're small and you're a woman, and it's like, you said that?
Right. Yeah, exactly. But now I can pretty much just do and say whatever I want, and most people don't really even bat an eye at it. I mean, I think they actually honestly expect it. If I don't do it, I think it would be weird. You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't, like, laugh at all the inappropriate things that people say around me, or, like, you know, I didn't, like, yell or scream once in a while, or get, you know, annoyed, or, you know, act like a guy, quote-unquote, you know, I think people would be like, what's wrong with you? You know? But, yeah, I mean, I think being male definitely helped my, or being perceived as male has definitely helped my career in general, because I'm, you know, I'm the norm, at least on the outside, right? And, I mean, not that I want to, you know, dare or, you know, assume or anything, but most people, I think, like working with or being around the same. I don't, but I think it's, like, comfort level. So, like, when someone looks at me, they expect, oh, you know, this person understands because they're like me and, you know...
I know. Yeah, I mean, like working on engineering projects that are completely staffed with transgender women.
Right, there you go. That would be cool. I would definitely want to be on that project. I'd be like, this is great.
It would be fabulous, not cool.
It would be. It would be amazing. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think honestly what's helped my career is just being who I really am. I think before... you know, transition, not being who I really was, really limited my ability to relate to people. And I think it eliminated my ability to really be genuine. And I think people pick up on things like that. They can't pick up on what it is, but I think now that even people that know me before, you know, very few people, it, you know, nothing's really changed for me. I mean, I do make people feel uncomfortable once in a while, I think, but, you know, it's kind of more on them than really me, because I refer backwards, because I'm not ashamed of what my past was. You know what I mean? Like, I'm very comfortable with talking about myself before and after, and I think for some people, that kind of makes them feel uncomfortable, but for the most part, I really haven't run into any major problems where I work. And, you know, like I said, I transitioned from being a woman to male, which is preferred in this industry anyway. So, you know, in everyone else's eyes, I traded up, right? You know, that's, I don't like that. I mean, but I acknowledge that that's the truth and it exists. So.
I'm terribly offended at that.
Sorry, Una.
Well, thanks to the FCC, I can't actually say my comment about, that I'd have about that on the air.
Right.
Linda would have to keep hitting the mute button.
And one thing that right. came up, I just want to touch it quickly, is that I think you had told me that being taken more seriously as a man in the engineering field actually resulted in a safety improvement, because as a woman, sometimes you weren't taken seriously when you were giving directions in the field. Is that correct?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, you know, you always run into, like, I don't want to, you know, say all men are like that or all people are like that. I mean, some people took me very seriously, you know, regardless of what I am, and that has changed. But yeah, you know, I think sometimes men's like, oh, you know, this woman's telling me to do something, but it's fine. She just doesn't know. You know what I mean? Like, whatever, I'm just going to do what I want kind of thing. But yeah, I think when I say it now, it tends to be more like, you know, coming from a more aggressive or assertive place, I guess. And maybe that has something to do more with me, but I'm sure it has something to do with, you know, I'm being viewed, you know, more as male or more authoritative. You know what I mean? I'm saying, you should be doing this. If you don't do this, this is what's going to happen kind of thing. And still people don't listen to me. You know, it is what it is. But I feel like I have a better success rate now that I'm, especially with the way of how I look, you know, I'm pretty... I think I look pretty masculine, I guess.
Oh, you actually do. For
yes.
you ladies out there, he is a very manly man.
Oh, for you men out there, too.
Well, yes, of course. Oh, my God.
Well, Ari, thank you very much for being with us today, but I'm afraid we're out of time, so thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And I'd just like to say that our community calendar update can be found on our Facebook page under the 10th Voice. And thank you for tuning in to TransTalk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. Many thanks to our special guests, Joanna, April, and Ari, our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson, and last but not least, my co-host, Una Nowling. Remember that you can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice@gmail.com. And next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart, Amy Bell, and Ebony Johnson. And be sure to join The 10th Voice next weekend as well, Saturday at 1 p.m., for more discussion of LGBT topics and events which shape our lives and our world. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.